Telling you, bro. What's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting no more Peggy O's.
Welcome back, guys and gals, to the Riff Raff, broadcasting to you today from beautiful, what is this place? Grand Bohemian Hotel in Orlando, Florida. I have a day off doing this Hall & Oates tour, almost finished this second leg. Apologize for the lapse in episodes, trying to get them out here as fast as I can. I still have a few Riff Raff t-shirts left, not too many, just extra large and large at this point, and I'm not making any more after this, so it's a collector's item if you want them, have a few. And sorry for the sniffles, I'm kind of fighting a cold, but wanted to get this done today for you. My guest today is Pat Bergeson. Pat's a friend, amazing guitar player, a natural, he's at ease with virtually any style. His credits, lots of credits. I mean, Lyle Lovett, Shelby Lynn, Susie Boggess, Butch Trucks. There's so many more. But the one I left out, as Pat will tell you, is probably the biggest game changer, Chet Atkins. He got a phone call that changed his life that you will hear about. Pat's not only a great guitar player, he's a ridiculously amazing harmonica player. He plays chromatic style on a diatonic harp. And I don't know, overblowing, I think, and then you can get all the chromatic notes in between. It's ridiculous. And he's got the chops and the knowledge to translate all his guitar stuff onto the harmonica. You'll hear he blows bebop on the thing. It's not fair, Pat. Anyway, he's got his own solo records, the most recent one being Hippie Dance, which is great. You're listening to the title track right now. His wife, Annie Selleck, is a great jazz singer in Nashville. He plays duets with her a lot, and sometimes they'll tour with Tommy Emmanuel. I believe he told me they did a Christmas tour. It's really successful, so keep an eye out for it. So I was so glad when Pat, you know, it was the last minute. I was in Nashville, and I called him. He said, yeah, come over. It was just fun, and always great to see him. Great guy, fun hang, just fun. And we had a lot of good jams here this day. We played some tunes. I've panned. Let's see. Pat is on the right side, and I'm on the left. Thank you again for all your comments and iTunes comments. And I love hearing from you guys. Hope you will enjoy this episode.
Thank you.
Hates me.
Yeah.
We didn't get to that part.
Groovy.
Nice, Pat.
Thanks, Shane. I was trying to do that without coughing through the
mouth. That's right. Too,
got a little onion bagel in my larynx there.
Star Bagel. This episode brought to you by Star Bagel.
Yes, Star Bagel. Yeah. 46th Avenue in beautiful downtown Sylvan Park, Nashville.
I'm sitting in beautiful Sylvan Park, Nashville with Pat Burgesson. Man, I haven't seen you in forever.
Yeah, I know. It's been a long time.
Sounding great as always.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah, we just kind of learned this little Grant Green tune that you were showing me. And yeah. Pat's playing a beautiful, you said it's a 61?
61 330.
330. Got the period correct instrument for Grant Green tune.
Yes. I guess that would be right, isn't it? This was his deal, the 330.
Yeah,
it's great. I love this guitar. That's a good one.
That one's in good shape, man.
Yeah,
but yeah, man, there's so much stuff I want to talk about. Let's see, haven't seen you forever. Who have you been playing with lately? I know you were doing something with Jack Pearson, right?
Yeah, Jack and I were doing a band together. I was so glad to be asked to do that by Jack. You know, I got a call from Butch Trucks about doing a band, and they named the band, Butch named it Labrere, like Labrere in A minor means, you know, the brothers is French for the brothers, Labrere. So, and that, you know, Allman Brothers had a tune called Labrere in A minor. And so anyway, that's what we did for the last couple of years. And then Butch passed away, unfortunately, last January. And so, yeah, it was fun, man. That was a really fun time. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And just, you know, getting to play with Jack every night and getting to hear him play. And
you and Jack together, man, that's a pretty potent combination right there.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, to get to be in a band with all those guys from the Allman Brothers and, you know, the two original drummers, you know, that was their last time together was in that band playing together. And so it was very special.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed that. I know you guys came up to Connecticut or something. I couldn't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I think I had reached out to you about coming to that. Yeah, that was a fun time. So we did that. You know, we did some festivals and some a little bit of touring. And so I got to play Jessica and Hotlanta and all those great Allman Brothers tunes and the songs that I learned when I was in high school. You know, playing rock bands in high school, that's what we played as Allman Brothers, you know, all the time. Except for we played all the parts wrong. You know, we'd screw up the harmonies and the whole band would fall apart, you know.
I didn't know that was just some of your background.
Oh, absolutely. That's like, we had a rock band called the Blues Agency, and that's all we played was Allman Brothers, Jay Giles Band, and the Rolling Stones. That's about all we knew. You know, we knew some other stuff, but that was like the majority of what we played.
No Skinner?
Oh, yes, and of course, Skinner. Yes, we played Skinner. For sure, we played that.
Yeah.
We played Gimme Three Steps and Sweet Home Alabama. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I always liked Skinner, man. They were sort of like the southern version of AC/DC. You know, they had cool guitar parts. Like, their things were all arranged. You could tell they put a lot of time into arranging all those guitar parts.
Oh, yeah. Those guys were brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, they were brilliant.
Ed King and, you know.
Oh,
even
God.
Now, like Ricky Medlock and all those cats.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys are great. Ed King was one of my favorite guitar players. Still one of my favorite players. I mean, he played some brilliant guitar stuff on those records.
Sweet Home Alabama. He's playing over those changes, too. It's like that solo. That's why it sounds so hip.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of Southern rock, we share a common former employer of both of us, Johnny Neal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I remember the first time I ever saw you play, Pat, was with Johnny Neal. And it was at that place. I don't know. I was asking you if you remember where it was. I guess it's now defunct. Broadway something.
Oh,
cafe or
yes. It was called... Darn it. Something like that.
Eons ago.
Yes.
You were playing
it was Thompson Harding and Nolansville down there.
Like
yeah. Yeah.
But you had an old Magnetone amp. You had two amps. I think.
Still have that amp. I still have that amp right over there.
And you had a Boss like three pedal thing with some kind of Ibanez distortion pedal. I remember talking to you.
Did I? Yeah. Okay. I think I had that Mostortion pedal.
That's what it was.
I still have that pedal. And the buttons are messed up on it. Like, somebody told me there's a guy who can put it in another box for me or something to make it work. But, yeah, that's a great-sounding distortion pedal. I'd love to still use it, but it's messed up. But,
you were playing with Johnny, man, and it was killing, man.
That's right. And you started playing with right after you.
Yeah. You was Jack and then you and then some.
Yep. Well, Johnny was a blast to play with.
I know.
Yeah. I miss seeing him. I need to go say hi to him sometime. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy. But yeah, man, he used to do some funny stuff, man. Just on stage.
Does.
Like his ears were so huge and he would just go. You remember how he would just go places, like, and it was so fun, you know, because you really had to be heads up when you played with him, because he was just always, you know, you take for granted, like, you know, because his ears are his eyes, you know, since he's blind, you know, legally blind or whatever, his ears are his eyes, and he's always listening.
Oh, yeah. And everything's heightened, man. You know, I think his senses are heightened because of his visual impairment, but
I always found myself kind of, you know, sometimes if I would just, you know, be distracted like for 2 seconds or whatever,
right,
I might be on the gig and I'm like, you know, maybe just my mind wanders for a second and I'm like, holy cow, he's right on me.
Yeah,
Johnny's big harmonizing ears. What I'm playing, you know, he's listening to every single note I'm playing, and it's, that was a real eye-opener for me.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, man, this guy is, his ears are wide open and he's listening. And he taught me, you know, that at that time, like, wow, you know, I need to be more like Johnny.
That's interesting. You know, cause I remember thinking that. I remember him, you know, he'd say, look, man, just hit. He was a motif, I guess, to be technical about it, but he's like, just stick with it. And I'm going to hit it with you. And we just keep building that shit. And people, they like that, you know, they get off on it. And all right.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not too much? No, hell, I'll play it for 30 seconds.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember Johnny playing this blues, man. He must have played, it seemed like 10 minutes, you know, this solo. And then he goes, break it down. I feel like playing a little bit now.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, how much is too much? But he could get away with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was so brilliant that way.
But you sounded great in that band, man. And, you know, Johnny loved your playing because I saw him the other day and he was... But man, you know, there's a lot of things I don't know about you. I want to ask you about... You were brought to... I don't know if you were brought to Nashville, but you were kind of summoned to Nashville by Chet Atkins. Is that right? So can you tell me about that? That's pretty cool. Like,
well, that was... that was early 90s. I was living in Brooklyn, New York. And at the time, I was there for a few years, and, you know, I was playing gigs around New York. I was there, finished college at William Patterson in New Jersey, and I lived in New York for 10 years.
Were you there when Bill Stewart was there?
Yeah, Bill was there at the same time I was there, and Peter Bernstein, and all those guys were kind of coming in and out, you know, Larry Goldings, and, you know, I was around when those guys had put that organ trio together for the first time, And just, man, all the guys that I went to college with there are still, like, the best cats in New York, you know, for playing jazz and all that. But yeah, so I was teaching at the National Guitar Summer Workshop, and my friend Robert Lee Castleman gave Chet a demo tape that we had done together when he was there doing a guest spot at the guitar camp. I went out of town that weekend or that week when he was there, and so I missed his thing. And yeah, he heard me on that demo tape, and kind of one thing led to another, and he just liked how I played on the tape, which is kind of, it's really neat, because that kind of thing doesn't happen very much anymore. You give somebody your CD or whatever and they go, wow, who's that guy playing on there, you know? I want to use them on a record with me, you know.
Wow. Because it wasn't just, I like you, you know, call me if you come to town. He actually hired you to play on a record. That was your...
Yeah, he hired me to... Yeah.
So did he just call you up?
He called me on like a... You know, I have it on a cassette tape, and I have it around here somewhere. Wow. I was actually trying to think if I could find it before you got here, and I'd play it. Yeah, he called me and left a message on the answering machine. I went out of town, you know, came back, and it was like over Thanksgiving weekend or something, and he left a message on the machine saying, hey, Pat, I want you to come down here and play on this record with me and Jerry Reed.
Pat, this is Chet Atkins of Nashville. I wonder if you could call me. I'm at area code 615-329, or my home number. I'll be there the next few days. It's 665. I want you to play on this record with me and Jerry on a couple of tunes. So call me about it. Bye-bye.
He had met me before that.
Yeah.
Because I came to Nashville to visit, and I was with Robert Lee Castleman doing they were doing a spec deal on him to record him as an artist. And so we did it down in Muscle Shoals with David Hood and Roger Hawkins those guys and Swampers. Steve Nathan. Yeah, it was an incredible session. Chet heard I was in the area and staying in town and you're staying in Nashville here. And he said, send that guy down to my office. I'm going to meet him. You know, so I went down to Chet's office and sat there and passed my green Stratocaster back and forth to each other. And you know, he's showing me stuff on the guitar and I'm showing him stuff on the guitar. He's like, hey, show me how you did that. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe Chet Atkins is asking me to show him how to play licks, you know. And then immediately I realized, you know, this is the coolest guy ever. I mean, he's 65 years old or whatever he was at that time when I met him. And all he wants to do is learn new licks on the guitar.
Wow.
You know, which says a lot. I mean, he was a musician first, you know, and that's what he, you know, not that that's too surprising, but, you know, one could think, oh, well, he's Chet Atkins. He just golfs every day and plays a little guitar, but that wasn't the case. You know, he was constantly practicing just like I was and all my friends were doing, you know, so yeah, we really hit it off. And then it was, you know, a month or two later, he called me. And in the meantime, he had gotten a demo tape of my music, which I was working on at the time, which was very much rock and roll, like blues, rock, kind of jazz, but more like, you know, the stuff he heard was me
was
really rocking out.
Instrumental
stuff. And it was me really rocking out. It wasn't like he even knew I played jazz or that I knew I was a harmonica player or anything yet. So I thought that was also kind of cool that he was taken by the rock and roll stuff, not like this other part of my playing, which I was very much a part of, you know, the jazz thing. But, you know, I also do that, you know, so I just thought it was cool that he dug that stuff. And I think at that time he wanted to have somebody in his band who was kind of a little more modern.
Right.
You know, which I added that element.
Yeah.
So he called me to play on that record, and I guested on the record and played some solos on a few songs. It was him and Jerry Reed.
I'm embarrassed to say I've never heard that record. I mean...
Yeah, it's called Sneaking Around.
Okay.
Yeah, and it came out in 91 or 2 or somewhere around there. Jerry and Chet.
You were really young then.
I was about 31.
Yeah.
Something like that. Chet and Jerry got together to make another record, and it's a really nice record. And so, you know, of course, I was a fan of Chet's and Jerry's and stuff. So, yeah, he called me to do that. And, of course, I was just, you know, mind was blown by getting called by him to do that. And I was just incredibly super green and excited. But I went in and just... And
that was recorded here in Nashville.
Recorded here in Nashville. He asked me to do this record. And then about 3 days later, he flew me to Nashville. And And the flight was like at 5 a.m. or something. And I got to Nashville at like 6 in the morning or something. And his manager, Fred, came over and picked me up, drove me to Chet's house. And I went down in his basement to record, you know, and it was just Chet down there, you know, by himself, you know, in the basement studio of his. And I walked in and he set up his old Standell amp with the 15-inch speaker, which is an incredible sounding amp. And I plugged into that, and I was sitting there taking my pedals apart and doing all that. And Jerry Reed, I hear the toilet flush. And then Jerry Reed walks into the room, and he sees me sitting there in the chair, and he goes to says to Chet, "Hey, is that the little son of a bitch?" and Chet goes, "Yeah, that's him." You know, so he walks over to me, and I'm sitting there in a chair. He gets behind me and puts me in a headlock. You know, gets my neck like this. And I'm like, oh. He goes. You like playing the guitar? I'm like, yeah. He says, you like girls? I'm like, yeah, yeah. He says, you like being behind the wheel? I go, I don't know. What, we gonna drive somewhere? He goes, no, I'm gonna run your ass over.
What the hell?
That was the first thing he said to me, man. And that was funny. I just never forgot that. And then we went and started recording. And Chet played me the tunes, you know, that he wanted me to solo on. Summertime was one of them. And Chet did a real cool version of Summertime where he played a fretless guitar, which is
really cool. Guitar.
I would love to have one of those guitars that he had. It's like it's a fretless guitar. So, yeah, I plugged in that Standell amp. It's turned down real low. I had my Rat distortion pedal and that green Stratocaster. And it sounded, the tone was fantastic. Mm. And, we went in, we listened to the first song, and Chet said, well, yeah, well, where should I play? What do you want me to do here? He goes, I got an idea. You go out there behind the glass, out in the big room, and I'm going to stand here behind the glass in the control room, and you watch me. He's got me up on a big stool, right? And I'm looking through the window. He says, you watch me. When I put my arm up like this, you play. When I put my arm down, you stop.
That's like producer secrets.
That was it. Like, so I'm amazing. sitting there in the stool, like with the headphones on, listening to the track, blowing a solo, and I'm watching Chet was standing there with his arm up in the air, and then he puts it down, and I stop.
That's like that he's like parking an aircraft or something.
That's exactly, yeah, that's what it was like. It was like he's in there waving me on.
Wow.
And, I played a few solos and hung out for a little while and listened to some more of the tracks and that they were working on, and went to lunch with them. And then I ended up staying in Nashville for a whole week after that. I told Chet right after that, I said, well, as we were leaving the studio, he said to me, he goes, said, you did a really good job. And he kind of whispered it to me in my ear, he had his arm around me. He said, you did a really good job. Like I knew you would.
Wow.
He looked at me real serious. Like he's, you know.
Yeah.
That was just really incredible. It was really incredible. He was like, yeah, I was stunned by the whole thing. But I think, you know, he really liked my writing, you know, the stuff I was writing. And, you know, I don't know what it was, but we just hit it off.
Just clicked.
Yeah, we just clicked and you know, to this day, I still can't really believe it happened. You know, I mean, I was just a guy like anybody else we know. You know, I'm a guitar player living in New York, and I got buddies who I think can play circles around me. You know, but I'm just, you know, playing weddings and bar mitzvahs and doing whatever I can to scrape together a living. And then that happened, and my entire life changed from then on, as a musician and as a guitar player. Because that, you know, kind of break is what every young guitar player needs. And I try to remember that all the time.
That was sort of the game changer right there, right?
Yeah, it was totally the game changer because, you know, I'm still living in Brooklyn. You know, Chet's coming to town to play Carnegie Hall with the New York Pops and wants me to be like the guest person on the concert.
So all of a sudden your cred goes way up.
Oh, yeah, I'm like playing at Carnegie Hall and then we're doing, you know, the Bottom Line and we're doing TV shows for the record. And I'm still living in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And it still hasn't dawned on me that I should move to Nashville.
Yeah,
I'm such
that's
a knucklehead.
That was a question that obviously, like, at what point do you say, okay, well, I got this, you know, carte blanche kind of invitation here. I should just...
Well, Chet had hinted to me a few times, like he'd say, he'd, you know, he would never come right out and say, you know, you know, moved to Nashville, and, you know, because he doesn't, understandable, you know, he's not going to say something like that. But, you know, he's hinting at it, like, well, yeah, I guess if you move down here, you sure do really good, probably, you know, stuff like that. And sure enough, I finally, after a year of doing several things with him, mm-hmm. I was moving. My lease ran up in Brooklyn, and there was no way in hell I was going to try to find another place to live in New York for the money I was paying that I couldn't afford. And so I just packed up one day, and, you know, and I'd moved out to Suffern, New York, with my friend Matt King, great piano player who lives out there in New York, went to college with at Wayne Patterson, and moved in with Matt. And I'd been there I think as soon as I moved in with him, I decided I'm going to move to New York. Moved to Nashville. And so I started coming down here to check out the scene and you know. The day I got to town, Chet picked me up and said, yeah, I got to take you down to the union, sign you up for the union. He said, it's a right-to-work state, but if you're going to be working with me, you're going to have to be in the union. And I was like, that was the day I got to Nashville. Mm. So, yeah, that was incredible.
So did you meet Harold that day?
Yeah, I did. I did meet Harold that day. Yep. Yeah. That was in 1993, February of 93.
I talked to Harold yesterday. Yeah. We were talking about those legends, man. He was talking about Chet yesterday. Wow. So Chet has literally picked you up from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Your first day in Nashville.
I went down there. I came down here with a friend of mine to move here. Then I went back to Brooklyn for maybe to get some more stuff. And then I came back a week later, and that's when he picked me up at the airport and took me to the union. But you know, so then on we started just doing, you know, various things to promote this. We started working on the next record, one called Read My Licks.
I had that one. Yeah, I remember that record.
And he really featured me on that record, you know. He put me on almost every song, and I wrote two of the songs on there.
You got a favorite one of those on that record?
Well, there's one called The Mountains of Illinois that I wrote when I was still living there in Brooklyn. And that was one of the demos of mine that Chet heard that was really kind of rock and roll, you know. And Chet loved it, and we did a version of it. And since then, Tommy Emmanuel has cut the song, cut a beautiful version of it, and made his own great version of that song. There's another song on there called Take a Look at Her Now that Robert Lee Castleman and I wrote together. Yeah, it was really great, Shane. It was pretty amazing. I still can't believe it all happened, really. I mean, I owe so much. I mean, Chet Atkins was, you know, I just, when I think about, you know, sitting here talking to you, when I think about how that all happened and everything, the circumstances around it.
You know, because you play with so many people, and the older you get, the older I get, I think about things. But you go back and reflect and you go, man, the stars really just align. I mean, obviously you play your ass off. That was a given, but to be just there's always some element of luck involved. It's mm-hmm. always something mm-hmm. that's going to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
never just about ability, man, although. And to have Chet Atkins, holy shit.
Yeah.
You're in Nashville, and then, I mean, your cred must have been instant in Nashville. Like, Chet Atkins brought this guy, this kid here. Did you start working right away with different people?
Yes, I did. I started working with Chet, with Susie Boggess, because I'd met her.
Back then, I
met Susie before I moved here. I did one of the TV shows for the Read My Licks record. And I met Susie before then, and then I worked off and on with her for the last 25
yeah,
years. She's one of my favorite people in the whole world, and I had a blast with her. Mm. And I started working with her, and then started working with Shelby Lynn and recording with her.
I saw you with Shelby with the symphony.
Oh God, yeah, that's right. Mark O'Connor was playing fiddle.
I think I remember that. And Dan Helf's dad was conducting or something. That
Matt,
was a long
Matt Rawlings
time.
Was playing piano, and I remember that.
I mean, I didn't know you then, but I remember that gig. I went to that for some mm-hmm. reason. I don't remember, but
I ended up doing that. But at the same time, I still had to, like you said, credibility. It definitely does give you credibility, of course, to work with Chet. But at the same time, I still wasn't like, it didn't really matter, because you still had to get in line.
Yeah.
You still had to get in line to there was already, when I first moved to Nashville, I wasn't even close to being in the league as a studio guy, as like mm-hmm. Brent Mason or some of the guys mm-hmm. that were doing session work back then. I still needed to be schooled and being good at playing on recording sessions
and parts and sounds.
I was so green. Like parts and sounds and just what not to do, and I was still really green, and I was just lucky that people asked me to do any of that, because it wasn't that I didn't have any experience. I was doing some recording sessions in New York, but they're not as it's not recording sessions in New York. My experience was that they're not at all like in Nashville. Having to read number charts and the way that people, you got to have your, I shouldn't say that, because it's the same thing in New York. You got to have your chops together, and you've got to be a good reader and all that too. But it just seemed like more of a factory down here in Nashville in terms of how many people were cranking out recording sessions. Back in the 90s, remember there was like mm-hmm. 200 and some X signed to all the heads. Yeah, everybody had studios everywhere. There's just so much of that going on. And, so I was getting schooled in that, and I mean, there was some, I can remember a particular session where I got called by, a real major producer, and he was just going to try me out, mm-hmm. And I did really good for I was there for 3 days or something track. And the first 2 days I really did really good. And the last day I was just there was just some stuff that was, I wasn't right for it, mm-hmm. And I definitely got humbled, very much so. And I was in there with all the top guys, mm-hmm. Recording. And I was terrified the whole mm-hmm. time, just like, yeah, but it was, I had to get my ass kicked.
Well, you certainly established yourself now, man. I mean, you always hear your name come up. Stop working for Chet after a while, when you were here, you just sort of
faded
out.
Right after I moved to town, not shortly thereafter, he asked me to be in his band, and he was doing about 25, 30 gigs a year, something like that. Not too many. And so, yeah, so I'd go out and do his gigs. And then in the in between all that, you know, I was doing, I went out and did little stints with Shelby Lynn and Wynonna and Lyle Lovett.
Yeah.
And then I started with Lyle Lovett in 96.
Okay, so you've been with Lyle, and you still, you were working with him up until, what, maybe 5, 6 years
ago? No, it's been a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, no, I worked with him from about 96 to 2002, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good run.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. And it was a blast. Yeah. I had a blast working with him. He was a great guy to work for. And, yeah, I had a lot of fun doing that. And it was a small group, mostly. The first band I was in with him was like a small group. He had Stuart Duncan and Jerry Douglas and Sam Bush.
All hacks.
Yeah, all hacks. Yeah,
non-playing.
They had some bluegrass guys in the band, you know, and I was playing, you know, electric, you know.
Yeah.
Didn't play any harmonica with him.
Yeah, he wasn't that big. A lot of people don't realize, you know, Pat is just, I don't say this lightly, I mean, you're an amazing harmonica player, and you play, I took a couple lessons from you, remember harmonica lessons?
Yes, I remember, yeah.
And you play, like, straight harp, but you play, you can blow it chromatic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a whole different thing.
It's,
you know?
Like, how, you know, like Howard Levy, you know, he does that. Howard Levy was the, is the man who pioneered that style.
He was the Flecktones original guy, right?
Yep, he's still with the Flecktones, and Howard is one of my heroes. Mm. You know, he's a hero of every harmonica player that I know.
You got a harp just, around here?
Yeah, Howard is the king.
So you're playing just a straight up diatonic harp, which is a fixed key. But you can bend the notes and make a chromatic. Yeah, straight up.
You know, that's just, yeah, you know, in the key of A.
Uh-huh.
You
know. That's so great, man. Wow.
Yeah. So that's like, you know, called, the technique is called overblowing. And you're bending and overblowing and doing all these things because all the notes are on there, you know.
That sounds so great. I mean, you're just
So you're doing that, you know, with your all angles of your tongue. You know, there's no button on there or anything. So you do everything with the inside of your mouth.
Now, Toots Thielman, does he play like a? Is he a chromatic?
He's the plays the one with the button. Yeah, and he's was the master, greatest. Yeah. You know,
but that and, is just ridiculous what you do with that man. So well, you thanks, get man. Calls a lot to play on records. Just harmonica too.
It's become probably half of what I do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I first, you know, got to Nashville, you know, people knew I played harmonica, and I, you know, got to be doing a lot of sessions on harmonica and stuff, doing recording sessions, and it's always great.
The cartage bill must be ridiculous for you.
The cartage bill's unbelievable, man. It's like, I charge a lot to carry more harmonicas in there, man.
No cartage, no pack.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's become a lot of what I do, and, you know, some great harmonica players here in town who I'm big fans of, a lot of the guys here in Nashville. It really came about. I'd heard a friend play it one time on a gig. This guy named Randy Marsh lives in Michigan. He was was on a gig with him, and he's a great jazz drummer. He got up at the end of the night and picked up a harmonica and was playing jazz on a regular harmonica. And I thought, man, I want to learn how to do that. Because I already played a little bit, you know, but I could play some Christmas songs and stuff. But he showed me some things, a few things, and he came to visit shortly after that and gave me one of his harmonicas. And at that time, I'm living in New Jersey, driving back and forth to New York all the time. And, you know, and you're sitting in traffic constantly. So it really was therapy for me, starting to play the harmonica, because I'd sit in the car you know, I'd get in a, you know, traffic jam and I'd be sitting there stopped, you know, on the Brooklyn Queens Expressway or some or something for an hour. I'd just get the harmonica out and blow instead of cussing at people in the other cars next to me, you know.
What a cool thing, man. You know, that's... I saw something on YouTube where a guy took these old HR-16 Elisa's drum pads and he put them inside his dashboard and, like, put the kick drum on the sidewall, you know, and, and under his seat, and he would tap, and he had the drums, like, hooked up, like, all this, the triggers.
Oh, yeah.
But that's, you know, the harmonica, it's good therapy. Traffic.
Oh, yeah. Therapy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, that's what you do. Shane, get one, put it in your car.
I know, you told me that. Yeah, there you go. Took lessons. I should have stuck with it. Really impressed.
You want to play a blues?
Sure.
Blues and E.
What are you, an E?
Yeah.
Makes me want to go buy a little harmonica again. But that's...
Thanks, man. I'll give you one.
thanks, man. Nice guitar playing there, Sean.
That's very, very ignorant.
I'm a big
simple
fan of yours, you know.
Oh, man. Thank you, Pat. Well, man, you know, one thing you're a master at is the Chet Atkins Travis picking thing. I could never do any of that shit. I can fake it, but...
Man, well, thanks for saying that, Shane. I appreciate that. I tell you, to be really be honest with you, you know, not to just say this just to be self-deprecating or whatever, but, you know, that style, I can play at it. You know, I can successfully do it on a recording session or, you know, I know some tunes and stuff, but,
yeah,
man, I just, God, that's one of those parts of my playing that I really would like to, you know, spend more time on. I always intend to, and I, you know, I'll go for long periods where I'll wear a thumb pick and I go out and tour with
Tommy Emmanuel,
and Richard Smith, yeah, and those guys are, they're masters. I mean, they're masters at everything, but the Chet's and Jerry Reed style stuff, you know, I mean, they're just the king, you know.
Right.
You know. But I, you know, I wear the thumb pick, but I would love to be better at it than I am.
Yeah, man.
You know, Tommy do that stuff.
Did you ever learn that Yankee Doodle Dixie thing, or, you know, Chet would play Yankee Doodle
Dixie. Yes, at one point.
Dixie.
I can't remember how to play it. Oh, yeah, I learned it a long time ago. I can't remember.
Left brain thing, man. It's like...
Mm-hmm. I know, it's unbelievable. I mean, I used to spend a lot more time playing that style, and, you know, I just haven't kept up with it, because I just I end up doing a, you know, so many other things. I end up, you know, I don't practice it anymore, so I just forget a lot of the material, you know. But well, thanks for mentioning that. I'd want to get back into doing it more. I write tunes, you know, and stuff where I do write fingerstyle type of things
and practice it, try to get it up.
Yeah. Do you do much of that?
Not much. I mean, I can sort of hack my way through something, but you know, just a little, you know, that kind of thing. But I can't do anything like anywhere close to Tommy Emmanuel or that. I used to learn some of these Chet Atkins things, like the scales, you know, where you.
Oh yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a cool thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so long ago that I used that, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool stuff. But yeah, I still mess around with it, you know. I tried writing a tune. Actually, I did write a tune. Richard Smith and I wrote a tune. I came up with this thing where you do the Chet Atkins style, but you play the thumb as a shuffle.
Wow.
So I wrote this tune called the Chet Shuffle. I don't know if I can remember how to play it, but let's see. Remember it. The vibe. So you get the thumb doing like a shuffle, and I'd like to write another tune like that. I have a recording of that. I'll give it to you.
That's so great.
You can play it, you know, or listen to it. It's called the Chet Shuffle. Messing around with, you know, trying to write something where the thumb is, you know. Then you got to figure out a way to subdivide the melody note in triplets to make it kind of all, to make it all kind of fit together. But it's actually a really cool thing. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I've never thought of that before.
If you're playing on a shuffle with a band and instead of playing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you could be playing. You could.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really cool feel. It's like a Chicago shuffle with Chet Atkins.
You know, you can comp that way, you know. You know, and if you just kind of turn your guitar down really low and play behind, you know, it really swings, you know.
It's great for the vocalist, too.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you're playing with a singer,
I don't know if you remember a few years back with your son, Sam. How old is Sam now?
He's 18.
Man, he's 18. Shit. Well, you know, you used to be married to Alison Krauss, and so your son, Sam... I was doing this recording session with a mutual friend, and Allison, it was for John Waite. So Allison comes to the session and brings Sam, and she's like, "Is it okay if Sam just kind of bangs on the guitar, you know?" And the guy that was producing it goes, "You know, let him do whatever, you know, Allison, blah blah blah." And I said, "Sure, man." And he shows up, and I think he was probably 10, maybe.
He was younger than that. I remember because you sent me a video of it.
Yeah, he had your Epiphone.
He was about four or five.
Was it an Epiphone he had? It was huge. It was your guitar.
Oh, it was my Epiphone Century.
It was huge on him. And and I said, "Where'd you get that guitar?" It's my dad. And man, he started playing this tune. It was the John Waite hit. We did a had to recreate the song to use for a commercial. They didn't want to get the master. They couldn't get the master. Every time I see you smile, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And Sam was playing guitar with me, like he overdubbed it. But man, the pocket was so good. And Neil, the guy that was engineer, he's like, "Shit, I'm using this. I'm just gonna pan it to hard left." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, you know." But his pocket back then was.
Oh yeah.
So he must be scary at this point.
Oh yeah, he's great.
He's deadly.
He's
man.
Producing people now, and he's got a publishing deal, and he's writing with all these great writers, and. Yeah, and he's,
well, that might have been his first recording session that he actually played on.
That could be.
And I remember sending you the video of him playing your guitar. I have that somewhere.
That's so cool. Yeah. Oh, I know. I remember. I loved seeing that. Yeah. I'm very proud of him. He's a good kid. Yeah, I love him.
That's great. Cool, man.
But yeah, he's a talented person.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I mean, he's always had that. He's had it from day one. He's always had the music thing. It was obvious from day one that that's what he was going to do. You know, I remember giving him drumsticks when he was about 6 months older, and he slept with them every night. He had those drumsticks in his hand, and, you know, he'd sit behind the kit, and he got him a drum kit, and he could play, you know, boom, boom, bap, boom, boom, bap with the hi-hat when he was 2 years old. You know, put him up on the stool. He couldn't even reach the bass drum pedal yet, you know, and he's going, boom, bap, you know. And
that's in the DNA.
Yeah. I mean, that was my first instrument was drums, too, but Sam was better than I was at age two.
I think all these kids now, man, they have the advantage of YouTube. I don't know. I always get into this on this podcast, but it always comes up. I mean, I guess it's an advantage. It could be a disadvantage because you get so scattered and saturated with content and, you know, like, how do I play? If you want to learn how to play Chet Atkins style, the beautiful thing is you can get on YouTube, but then the drawback is there's like a million videos of things and you don't know which one is like accurate, or it's hard to stick with one thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. There's a lot of information out there, and nothing beats sitting down with another guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, and saying, "Hey man, show me this. Show me how you do that." 'Cause it's, unfortunately, you know, people don't have to memorize anything anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't have to remember anything. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a time where, well, you could bring your cassette recorder into a lesson, which was, you know, everybody let you do that. But a lot of times people would just come in and they would just remember what you showed them.
Yeah.
You know, and they were like, they knew that they had one chance to get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you would have gotten to go get a lesson with Chet Atkins, you might have gotten one chance.
Yeah.
And if he shows you something, he's going to show it to you one time.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
And you better remember
it. It's going to stick with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like nowadays you don't have to, you know, you can just record it on your iPhone or, you know, go on YouTube and find some version of it. And I don't know. I think there's a tendency for people not to commit things to memory or to really try as hard. And, you know, I think, you know,
well, I mean, I guess if you want to open. How many phone numbers do you know now? Like, think about that.
That's true.
Who knows a phone number anymore?
You don't have to remember them. You remember your mom's and your wife's or a couple other people, you know, but you don't remember them. No, that's so true. You don't have to commit anything to memory, you know. And that's really the unfortunate thing, I think, for where, you know, the great things about technology. Yes, it's really incredible that we can do that. It's unbelievably incredible. It's like magic. We can go on YouTube or whatever and find out, Google anything that we want to know.
Right.
That, you mean, assuming that that's accurate too, because
never know.
You never know. They don't have to nail it the first time. They should know how to, and they should strive for that, but Right. I'm guilty of that. You know, I'm more guilty of that now than I used to be. You know, although I do know if I'm going to go, I want to know if somebody's going to want to go in the studio and record, and we're going to, you know, this is what you're going to have to do. You're not going to get a chance to like fix your overdubs or whatever.
I think about that, man. Like some of the record, nobody has the balls to do it anymore, but there was a Bill Frisell record. It was Ginger Baker. And it was Bill Frisell, Ginger Baker, and Charlie Hayden, and it was recorded direct to disc, I guess it was called. You know, and it's, you got to be fearless to do it. Jazz players do that.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about that. That's the great thing about learning how to play jazz and, you know, being in that world is that Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't do that so much in jazz, but you can, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it, with doing it, but yeah, it's, I don't know. Yeah, you, that's, everybody has a, I think a lot of musicians have a similar agreement about that kind of thing. You know, how you lose the magic of the music if you, you know, overdo it and like tune everything and fix every little thing. And, you know, you get with this incredible bunch of rhythm section guys who play, like, say you get with a bunch of New Orleans guys and their whole deal is about the feel that they can get, they can create as five humans in a room that nothing in the world can do on a, on a computer program. You can't emulate that. You can try to move things around and make it feel good. You can't
quantize that or break the machine. Yeah, it would sound weird anyway with that sort of thing.
But there's guys who like get this amazing bunch of guys in the room, you know, like a bunch of funky dudes and like get this incredible sounding track and then quantize the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And just suck and every bit of soul and life out of it, you know, and it's like, that's not the world I like to live in anymore.
Yeah, people pick up on that.
But anyway.
Let's talk about, I'm sitting in this room of amazing guitars, and Pat's got, you know, all kinds of cool toys in here. You're playing that, the 330, and I've got, I don't know, this is a, an Epiphone.
That's an Alcaiola.
Alcaiola, man, this is a great axe.
That's a guitar I bought recently.
Really great axe.
You want me to get a photo of you holding that guitar? Yeah.
I want to get a photo of both of us after, if we can.
Yeah, for sure.
Holding guitars, but,
that is a groovy looking guitar. You look pretty groovy with that guitar there, Shane.
Yeah. This is great, man.
Yeah, that's a, that's a, is that neat how the neck feels on
it
that?
It feels it's good. That's why I like it. It's like a Strat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
And then you've got these amps, they're the Jack Pearson sitting. Now what is VVT? Who makes those?
A guy named Jim Hill. Jim Hill is in, I believe, Frederick, Maryland? Waldorf, Maryland is where he is. Waldorf, Maryland, and he builds those amps.
Really
he does.
Nice.
He makes, Jim Hill makes some really, really great amps. These VVT amps stands for Vacuum Valve Technology. And he's made this amp for Jack a couple of years ago. It's about a 40-watt amp. With a 15-inch speaker.
It's loud.
Got the best tone. It's like it does everything right. I don't know what the deal is. It's like I love Fender amps too. But this has a thing. You know, that 15-inch speaker, like Jack says, you know, you can put it anywhere in a room and you can hear it. I mean, I turn it the other way, face it the other way a lot of times on stage. I rarely have that thing up louder than 2.
Yeah, I would say it's loud.
I mean, it'll break up, you know, when you get it up, you know, louder, because, you know, it's not like 100, it's 40 watts, but it's plenty loud. It's got a 15 inch speaker, the tone that you can get with any guitar that you plug into it. It's great. It's got a great reverb. It's got a little mid-range control bump switch on there that bumps up the mid-range. It's got a brightness switch, volume, mid, treble, bass, and reverb. And every guitar I plug into it sounds great.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And with pedals, and when you're turned up a little louder, it just Man, I'd love for you to borrow one sometime, Shane. Like when you're in Nashville,
all right.
You know, when you're in town sometime, borrow one of these from me and take it to a session or to a gig or something. Because I think you'd dig it.
All right.
Yeah.
And they go to 12, not
11.
It goes to 12. It's too louder.
Yep, it goes too louder. Even the reverb goes to 12. That's pretty
cool. Oh, yeah. We've moved on. 12 is the new 10.
It's the new 10. That's right.
So you're doing some more stuff with Tommy Emmanuel?
Yeah, Tommy, I've been going out and touring with him on it for his Christmas show in December.
Yeah.
And Annie, my wife Annie Selleck, comes out and sings with us, and John Knowles, the great John Knowles, CGP.
Arranger, right? Like he arranged all these cool Christmas things for fingerstyle guitar.
Yeah, he can arrange anything. He's the greatest guy in the world and a great, great guitar player. And he plays classical. So it's me and Tommy and John on guitar and Annie singing.
Man.
And we just do all Christmas tunes, and Tommy, you know, Tommy does a whole set of his stuff, the first set, and then we come out the second set and do Christmas tunes. And that was a lot of fun doing that with him. And he's just the greatest guy. I love him. He's just a unbelievable player. Have you seen him play live?
I've not like in person, but on video.
Oh, Shane,
I've seen him.
Shane, if he comes around up where you're anywhere near New York or wherever you are at the time, and you want to go to a show, let me know, and I could probably
I'd love to
make sure that you can go to the show, because he's one of those people who, he's one of a kind, one of the greatest there's ever been. And of all the people who could have been given a CGP,
certified guitar player.
Yeah, I mean, a guy like Tommy is the guy you want to give that to, you know, because he's going to take it to the next level, and which he has, and he's astounding as a talent, as a player. Just an awe of his accomplishments, and he's a great guy. But so yeah, we've been doing that, and I was doing that gig with Jack, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's happening with that. That might be some more things coming up, but I'm not sure.
But you stay pretty busy in town.
And then here in town, I do. I still do recording sessions for people, and various gigs, and play with Charles Walker and Charles Wig Walker. We do Acme Feed and Seed every Saturday brunch, you know, and Annie and I go out and do some duo gigs together, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I play acoustic, you know, I got a Maiden acoustic, and I plug it into that AER amp, Compact 60 amp, cool. And it's a great sound.
Oh, yeah, it's right there. It's holding up my recorder, but
yeah. Yeah, that's a great sound, so, and I'm going to start recording some things again this year.
Right on.
That I need to do. I'm way overdue for that. And I'm looking forward to hearing that record. I saw you put out a record of, like, you did a trio record.
Oh, last
or something.
Year, yeah.
I want to hear it. Get me a copy of that. I know that's good. I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah, I finished it. Let's just say that.
<He'll> just sing. Glad to finish. Yeah, I know.
You start
how you
projects
feel.
And you're just like.
Oh, yeah. This last record I did. This record called Hippie Dance came out in 2011. That's how long it's been since I've done one. And I recorded on six of the tunes on that record. I recorded those tracks in 1993.
Wow.
That's how old those tracks are.
Hey,
and some of my harmonica playing on it is from back then. I play a lot better now than I did back then, but I'm still proud of that record. A tuba player and I from my hometown named Dan Anderson, and I started that project, and it's him playing bass on the tuba, and he's one of the best tuba bass players.
Yeah,
for playing bass lines and stuff, he grooves like crazy. But
I have some of your records, and I have the stuff you did with our mutual friend Steve Shapiro. I'll probably play some of that on here.
Oh yeah,
all those records.
Yeah, Steve's great. Yep.
Well, let's just play one more quick thing.
We
don't even have to.
Okay.
I'll chop all this down, but. Thank you. If you ever want to sell this guitar, let me know, Pat. I love this.
That's great. I'm glad you like that, Shane. I figured you would like that. Because feel how, like, when you play down low, like an E. Like, if you play like the... Yeah, if you play like the low E notes, like open and like play licks down there, they sound really... And when it's got distortion on, it's really unique, you know, really. And those pickups, man, I dig those Rio Grande pickups.
Yeah, Pat, man, nice.
Yeah, all right, fun, man.
Thanks for doing this. It was fun.
Yeah, you're great welcome. Yeah, thanks for having me, Shane.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure, man.
Good fun. Great to talk to you. Dig it. Yeah, man, and, you know, if you're in town, recording again. You want to take that?
Oh,
in,
okay.
That guitar. Seriously, yeah, man. Wait, if you ever like need to borrow gear or somewhere, want to take a guitar or use any shit when you're in town.
Okay, I'll take that one. That one. That
all
one.
Right,
that
go
one,
ahead. Take all of them. I don't give a shit. I don't. I don't
and
play
that
them.
Fish too, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Can't have the fish, man.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Pat. Hope you enjoyed that. A lot of great advice and a lot of great playing in that one, Pat. And as always, thanks for tuning in to the Riff Raff. Love your comments on iTunes. Give me a rating if you don't mind. And yeah, I have a lot of other past episodes up there. If this is the first time you've ever heard the podcast, there's a lot of stuff up there. I've got, you know, guitar, if you're guitar players, John Schofield and Mike Stern and Dweezil Zappa and John Leventhal and David Grissom and Adam Levy. There's so many cats. And there's also great drummers and Johnny Vidakovich and Kirk Covington. And there's a little something for everyone. So check it out. If this is the first time, welcome. See you next episode. Thanks.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save